Like it is the John Canta Show. We'll stay with you for item 13, sage grass season and status update.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm really missing Andrew this month. He does a great job and helps break it up. But I'll be with you for the next two. So here again with the sage grouse hunting season, I'd like to ask our senior wildlife biologist Alex Solom to present some information to you. And you know, these are our experts again, and we collect a lot of good data and helps us make these recommendations and inform the decisions here. So start with Alex, if you would, please, Madam Chair.
Good afternoon. Can everybody hear me?
We can, Alex. Yeah. And it looks like your
presentation is coming up. Madam Chair, Secretary Roebling. We'll get the PowerPoint put up here with a very clever name, Sage Grouse in South Dakota. I wasn't feeling very clever when I was making the PowerPoint. All right. As John said, I'm Alex Solom, Senior Wildlife Biologist, located out of the Huron office. I'm here to talk about sage grouse in South Dakota and the surveys that we deal with them, as well as the items that we have in their action plan. So go ahead. So sage grouse are large grouse distributed throughout most of the West. They're located in North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and shifting westward. They're sagebrush obligate, so these birds actually need sagebrush to persist on the landscape. They use it for food, they use it for shelter, they use it for reproduction, just typically just associated with sagebrush landscapes. Right now, currently, Butte and Harding County are the two counties that we consider where the range of sage grouse in the state of South Dakota, where they actually are. One of the kind of funky things with this bird is that we have seen a decline in distribution and abundance, not only in our state, but westward wide. One of the problems with this is we can't really, as biologists, put our fingers on what the decline actually is. There's a multitude of factors, such as disease like West Nile, the loss of sagebrush, fire, grass encroachment with non-natives such as cheatgrass, all this sort of thing that really kind of has put a damper on what their population status has become. So here you can see a graph. We're in South Dakota there. We're on kind of the top map. We're on the top right hand of this distribution map. You can see the blue area there that encompasses both Butte and Harding County. We're a fairly small player in the game when it comes to sage grouse. However, it is an important species that we determine on our land, in our landscape. Anytime we're having sagebrush on the landscape, it benefits a multitude of species such as mule deer, songbirds, grouse, or prairie grouse who actually use this. We're talking sharptails and things like that. But you can see here, just with the figure, that a lot of their pre-settlement distribution has truncated kind of more into that central western part of the nation, including Colorado and Wyoming. So one of the really kind of funky things with this bird that's different from most upland species is that when we harvest these species, harvest tasks should be a little bit more conservative than, say, a pheasant season or a grouse season. They have a very different life history when it comes to, they have a very different life history characteristics compared to other upland birds, like I mentioned, pheasants and other prairie grouse such as sharptails. They're longer lived with lower reproductive potential. So they have fairly decent overall annual survival, so those adults and juveniles will make it 1 year to the next. However, their brood survival, so once the nest actually hatches and they become chicks, is generally low. And this is predominantly due to, potentially poor habitat. Again, we might see these West Nile outbreaks of just things that we can't necessarily control. But because of that, we have to be very judicious on how we could potentially harvest these species. And other states have definitely picked up on that and followed suit. So because of that, in our action plan, we have developed a recommendation for the season setting process. We developed a LEC survey that we've been doing for 60-plus years that gives us a population index on how we can tell what these birds are doing. So in order to open a potentially short season that was regulated by access permits, we needed to count at least 30 males on all leks in Butte and Harding County for at least two consecutive years, or 300, excuse me, males in Butte and Harding County for two consecutive years. So if we had 299 males in 2024 and we had 350 this year, that would not initiate the open of a season. We'd have to have two consecutive years. Anytime we counted under 300 males on these leks in these two counties, we would recommend no hunting season. So in order to come up with the population index that I kind of alluded to, we do complete sage-grouse lek surveys. You can see here just kind of a picture of where these leks are actually located in Butte and Harding County. They're spread fairly evenly throughout Harding County, except for more of the eastern side of things. There's obviously way less sagebrush over there. They kind of tend to be a little bit more located towards the western part of the county. And then in Butte County, they're more, again, more in that northwest corner of it. So when we go and count these sage-grouse lek surveys, again, these leks are locations on the landscape where males will congregate. They'll dance for females, and females will come in and attend these leks and kind of hang out on the periphery. And then from there, they'll select their mate and then initiate nest afterwards, hopefully. When we do these lek counts, we do them early in the morning. We try to count every single lek in these two counties that we considered active. Active leks are leks that we've counted at least two males on in the last 5 years. The ones that are inactive, we try to get to them as time allows, but generally speaking, once those leks have blinked out, it's kind of hard for birds to come back to the area. There's usually a landscape effect that, potentially causing these leks to be inactive. So with this year's count in 2025, we were actually at 70 males counted on our active leks in Butte and Harding counties. We had a total of about 17 active leks that were there. And you can kind of see this historic trend of fewer and fewer males actually attending these leks. Again, we're on the periphery of their landscape. These birds are in a sagebrush ecosystem. However, we're kind of more of a grassland ecosystem with a little bit of sagebrush rather than a sagebrush ecosystem with a little bit of grass in it, kind of like these western states. But their populations are very cyclic. You can see kind of these rises and falls with their population through time. That's just the nature of the beast when it comes to sage grouse. We see this in the western states. You'll see a rise for a few years and then it'll decline again. Again, just indicating that they're cyclic in nature. But overall, we have seen a decline in their abundance throughout much of their range in South Dakota. But I do have to reiterate, this is, again, a nationwide trend. And it's not too surprising considering kind of the status of sage grouse in those western states. And with that, I can take any questions.
Interesting. Any questions, comments for today's presentation? Seeing none. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Secretary Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Very interesting presentation, Alex. I just had a quick question on lek detection probabilities. And do we have pretty good confidence that we are finding all the leks that might be occupied by males? And can you just shed some light on that, please?
Yeah, we do complete IR flights roughly every 10 years to double check these inactive leks to make sure that we aren't missing them. Observers are told to go to the quote unquote lek location, and we do know that some of these leks kind of bounce around depending on grazing conditions or grass like conditions in the actual places that these take place. So observers go there. They don't just go to a waypoint and if nothing's there, they don't count it. They do continue to do searches. We will record quote-unquote new leks if those birds have moved more than 400 meters. That's one of our criteria, that we consider it a new lek if they happen to move that far. And we do take that into account. But we are pretty confident in the current counts that we're doing, but like I said, we do have the opportunities to do IR flights to kind of search a broader location around these lakes to make sure that, you know, based on survey conditions such as wind and cloud cover, that we aren't missing these birds.
Very good. Additional questions, comments from the commission? Alex, maybe you did mention this. In terms of the land space, are we doing both public land, private land? Are we working with landowners to observe this?
Yes, through the chair, we do access leks on both private and public land. So we do contact, or we do have folks contact private land owners. And I tell you what, they're tickled pink. They do have a really good relationship with the department. They like sage grouse on their land, so they're more than happy for us to come out there and allow us access to their property to go search them. There's some leks that are located on BLM ground and all that sort of stuff, but a majority of them are on private land, you know, minus like walk-in areas and things like that. And even if that is considered public and not state or federally owned, we'll still contact that landowner and make sure that it's okay for us to go out there because it is outside of the bounds of a normal hunting season.
And Alex, just to follow up, when we look at those numbers and as they're going down, and I recognize that you mentioned we're kind of on the fringe in terms of their ecosystem, what are we finding for some of the reasons that those numbers are going down?
Through the chair, we have documented West Nile outbreaks in the past. You can see maybe some of those really drastic declines are because of that. Again, that's not something that we can always control. However, with our private lands program, we will take out those, you know, stagnant dugouts where mosquitoes can hang out and breed and actually produce the mosquitoes that carry the West Nile virus, and we replace them with like stock tanks and running water to try to mitigate that damage. But 9 times out of 10, it just kind of comes down to just sheer lack of sagebrush. Sagebrush is a very finicky species. It takes a long time to establish. If there's any time that fire were to occur on the landscape, sagebrush will just be completely died out, and they'll have to go back in there and do sagebrush plugs in order for it to regenerate. And then in addition to that, just sometimes in certain pastures, quote-unquote overgrazing, where you're promoting like cheap grass species that'll come in there and outcompete the sagebrush that's on the landscape. Those are just kind of a few instances that we think are driving our abundances down. But landowners out in the Northwest do a really good job of, you know, grazing and things like that. I know particular in this last 2 years that we've compiled the research, a lot of the comments are that, you know, there's a lot of biomass out there for these birds to nest in and things like that. So it's not an overgrazing component, at least in my expert opinion right now. I think it just comes down to we don't have the amount of sagebrush that a lot of folks in the western states do, and as an obligate species, it's necessary for them to persist.
Very good. Additional questions or comments? I know there are changes, so we need no action on this moving forward. Is that correct? Because there are no changes from last year.
Correct, Madam Chair. What we're recommending is that you keep the season closed for a lot of the information that Alex presented. And if I could just add a little bit, you know, it's not the only reason, but here again, habitat, right? That's a big key to this species and its success. And just reiterate our priority in the department here of habitat and access. And so this is a big one. And Alex kind of alluded to it, but, you know, that's one thing we might work with a landowner on in regards to trying to improve sage grouse habitat is just rotational grazing management plans, things of that nature. There's some fence work that we can do and things like that. So, yeah, habitat's huge for us, and here again could be work that we could do to benefit this species. And reiterate again, too, what Alex said, you know, lots of landowner support for sage grouse and really a great opportunity for us to engage landowners and build relationships and, you know, get in the door to talk about habitat and access and other programs that the department offers. So it really is kind of a neat thing and interesting that I can't think of one that doesn't like sage grouse up in those areas. So a really cool opportunity for us. But yes, Madam Chair, with our recommendation of no change, you wouldn't need to take any action unless you wanted to go a different path.
All right, very good. Thank you for that information and that report to Alex. That was very informational, something we don't always think about, so that's good to be updated on that. Thank you.